Let me just nip to the loo before we...
I'm rolling now.
Oh, you're rolling.
No, fine. Go to the loo.
Oh, no, actually, I don't know.
Go to the
no,
loo.
No, I'll use it.
Go to the loo. My name's Todd, and I'm here to say let's talk about Unisol in a crazy way.
What?
Can I get a hell yeah?
Hell yeah?
Hell no.
Hell no. Hello. Welcome to the Bitter End Podcast with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan. Sorry for the bad rap, guys. I'm unpracticed.
It can only get better, and I look forward to it getting better.
Well, there's a lot to look forward to. There is a lot to look back on, Tom, because here we are at the end of our fourth season.
Blimey. What? How have we done this?
We've been, at the point that Tom and I are recording, dear listeners, we've been doing this show for almost a year. We're just shy of a year.
And what a journey.
It's been a real journey. Four seasons deep, four franchises.
Four seasons, like a year. Like you get in a year.
Spring, summer, winter, and the other one.
Yep.
And I do feel that of the four seasons, Unisol for me very much represents winter. I think it's quite cold, it's unforgiving, you know, despite my search for tender moments. It doesn't give a lot back, you know. It expects you to meet it on its terms.
Yes.
And I've tried my best to do that.
Yeah, I think, like winter, it suddenly kicks in very hard and you've got there's nowhere to go but just straight through it. And by the end of it, you're actually kind of like quite beaten down and bedraggled and maybe ready for something new. But it's, I've enjoyed it as a franchise. I think it's fucking weird.
So yeah, the purpose of this wrap-up episode that we're about to do, we're not watching a film. If you're a new listener, if you're an old listener, you'll know we've done these wrap-ups before. If you're a new listener, this is where we take a step back and we look at the entire franchise of films as a whole and beyond the films. And then at the end of this episode, we will be revealing the results of the poll and the franchise we will be covering for season 5. But first, Tom, these films.
These fucking films. They are an odd bunch, aren't they?
They really are. I mean, I hadn't seen the first one or any of them before we came into this. As you know, it's not a genre that I traditionally had a lot of love for, yet I've found a lot to like within them. I think that anyone that has enjoyed any of the movies we've talked about in previous seasons should dip into at least some of these. Weirdly, I don't necessarily feel like the first one is the best of the bunch, but it's certainly not the worst.
No, it's... I think the thing that's really odd about this franchise is it's... Unlike, you know, like, say, like, The Howling that we watched.
That had its ups and downs.
It had its ups and downs, but they weren't really connected stories, the majority of them. They were just werewolf stories, but there wasn't, like, a main central character running through them. They didn't really tie into each other properly in some ways from film to film. And, like, this one is kind of like that, but kind of not, in that everything stems from that first film, and then it just kind of, each film just kind of goes and wanders off and does its own thing, and it's not really worried about what the next film is going to do. It's not really worried about what the last film's going to do. Like, even the last two films are so so apart from what the original one was. Like, if you just, like, popped on, like, Universal Soldier 1 and then put on Universal Soldier 6. Fuck me. That is a jump.
It's a big jump. For me, I think a lot of it comes down to, like, the nut of what the basic idea of the game is with Universal Soldier, right? So with The Howling, the point of the game is it's werewolves. We get it. We know what werewolves are about. With Highlander, it's like, all right, there's these guys, they live forever, they're fighting each other through time, and you can just say that to someone and they'll get it and they'll be like, okay, cool, that sounds interesting. Friday the 13th, it's like a bloke in a mask running around killing teenagers. Cool. With this, it's a little bit murkier. It's like, well, what is the nut of these films? They're about these guys that were soldiers, but they died, but they've been brought back to life, but that's bad. Sometimes people are using them for bad reasons. Sometimes people are trying to use them for good.
Yeah.
Like, what's the...
It gets very... It's confused, and the franchise kind of, like, forgets about elements that have gone before and kind of, like, then focus on other things without even really properly introducing them. So... this whole idea of like, well, we're going to take soldiers who are the best of the best and we'll make them better. We'll bring them back from the dead and we'll control them, which is a kind of a mental idea anyway.
I just feel like they really wanted to make a movie about robots or something. It was like they were trying to picture somewhere between the Terminator and RoboCop.
Yes.
But they were like,
yeah, very much so.
That will be a bit too close. We don't want to get sued. So let's make it... dead people, but not zombies. That's being covered elsewhere. We don't want to do a horror movie. So let's make it like totally clean, completely ordinary looking dead people.
Yeah, because there's all this stuff like in the first film and then in the two made for TV ones, that whole thing of like them overheating and all of that, that completely disappears in the latter films. And then cloning becomes a thing where in where like Dolph comes back and it's just kind of hinted at that like, oh yeah, we've cloned him, we've cloned a whole bunch of other guys. And then I feel that like in those last films, it's not about reanimating the dead, it's about having like this big freezer full of cloned soldiers, because John, like the main character in the last film, he's like, you know, he meets his clone self. Suddenly the film, the series has changed into like a cloning series rather than a reanimated soldier series.
If you
know what I mean?
And it becomes a much more personal story, I think, for him at that point. It's that the filmmakers are asking you, the viewer, to be like, well, what if I met my clone?
Yeah.
Whereas before, in the first film, the question isn't, well, what if when I die, people reanimate me and turn me into a cyborg killing machine? Like, that's not what they're asking. They're just saying, do you want to just sit back and, like, look at a bunch of cool explosions? And I'm like, yes, please.
Yeah. No, I think that it worked, like, John's story in that last film really works, where, it was an interesting twist on it, but a lot of it just kind of... they kind of don't even really mention in the last films that like, oh, these are reanimated dead guys. They're all like sleeper agents, or they're all like genetic experiments, and all sleeper agents for the government. And in the very first film, it's meant to be off the books. It's not being run by the government. Mm. And then at some point it's just like, oh no, the government is running this. So there's all these kind of inconsistencies, like with the continuity of the films, that you've got the two made for TV movies that then get ignored by the second JCVD film, The Return, which is then just so different from the direct-to-DVD films at the end.
Yeah.
Like, in tone and just kind of, like, the story that they want to tell. This is the reason why, like, since, like, when we were starting the podcast and we had our big list of franchises to do, I was like, oh, we've got to do this because it just sounds like a hot mess. And it is. And it's almost like... it's really hard to get your head round, like, for me, like, why all these films have come out the way they have. And just, like, just the basicness of why? Like, Universal Soldier was not a mega hit.
No, it doesn't really have anything that iconic in it.
No.
Except for JCVD and Big Dolph.
Yeah, in their outfits. But then it spawned like a TV series which came out, you know, the film came out at the beginning of the 90s, end of the 90s, the TV series comes out.
But it wasn't a TV series because it got canned and turned into the film.
Oh,
right?
Yes, made for TV movie. Yes, yeah, sorry.
That's right.
But it's kind of like, okay... But why? Like, it didn't make such an impact then. Why did they try and bring it back then? Why did they do The Return with JCVD? And then why did they do the direct-to-DVD ones, which are then, like, very, like, incredibly dark action films?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
So much more so. It's very rare, like, you ever see... like, a film series. Usually, like, the first one is going to be as dark as you get. Especially with like action films, that's going to be as bloody and gory as you're going to get. And then it's going to get tamer and tamer as you go on.
Well, look, man, I don't want to talk about like the decline or the downer notes of the franchise, because it's our 1 year anniversary of podcasting. Mm. We're at the end of season four. We're going out celebrating, right? This is our big end of year party. So thanks to you guys for listening as well. We've got some close buddies coming and they're going to be taking us out on the town. Before that happens, Tom, I think that we should focus on the good, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm painting a bad picture.
Painting a bleak picture. You're making it seem as if we've had a bad time watching these films.
I haven't had a bad time.
We have not. So I put it to you, Tom. Mm. I'm interrogating you.
Mm.
Favorite Unisol film? Go.
I'd probably go. I might say the first one still, but that's not to say that there's not a lot that I. There's bits in all these that I loved.
I want to hear only the things that you love about the first film. Go.
The intro.
The necklace and all the Vietnam stuff.
Basically, I mean, none of the films are perfect, but the first film is bookended in a great way. That the intro and the ending, with like the big fight on the farm.
Oh man, yeah. With the like combine harvester.
Yeah, with the combine harvester. Those are great bits. And also just like that is peak Dolph in that film. That is when he's at his... He's great in the other films that he appears in, but that is the best you're getting of Dolph.
He's very, very... When he shows up in the later films, our boy Dolph has changed a bit.
Mm.
Some of the light has dimmed in his eyes.
Yes.
He's not that bright spark of a boy that we see in the first film, who is just so lovable.
And he's... You can tell he's loving it. You get that real impression that he is just like really he's relishing in that role.
Even though I wouldn't necessarily describe him as a great villain. There's actors who I think are great villains. I'm all of a sudden I can't think of a single one. But he's not necessarily one of them. Like, he's no Alan Rickman, is he?
No, he's not a Hans Gruber kind of guy. But if you want that man mountain, that immovable object, Dolph Lundgren is great. Like, he's great in Rocky IV as Ivan Drago, like the, again, like a robot-like boxer. His stuff in the first movie is tip-top, and he's great to see in the later films. Different. As with every film, different takes on the central theme of Universal Soldier every time. But yeah, like, some good stuff in there. What about you, Todd?
Well,
you've gone on record saying what your favourite film is.
Well, baby, you know that there is an archive out there of my opinions of my favourite Universal Soldier film, and I'm going to have to stick with the last one, Day of Reckoning.
Mm.
I'm really sorry. I know it's not the truest representation of what Universal Soldier is all about.
Mm.
I feel like I would have a very different opinion had I seen Universal Soldier at about that age of like 12, 13. I would have been like Martin, our guest from when we watched The Return, who watched it three times in one weekend
and,
you know, held it really close to his heart even into adulthood. I didn't watch it. I didn't get around to it. And so it's little over my head. It's not that I watch it and think, this is a bad film. I'm just like, my heart doesn't have like that developed chamber in it that this puzzle piece fits into. It's my fault.
No, I get it. Because there is some fucking great stuff in that movie.
In the last one. Oh my God, some really solid moments. Like that really long extended shot towards the end where your boy, Scott Adkins.
Yes, Scott Adkins.
Scott Adkins, who, listeners, Tom and I went to go and see the Marvel movie Doctor Strange in the cinema the other day. That's got Scott Adkins from Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning in it as like one of the bad, evil wizard henchmen dudes that little Benny Cum-Cum, Benedict Cumberbatch has to like have a big wizard fight with.
Yeah. Didn't even realize it was, didn't recognize him until it came, flashed up and said on the credits, said Scott Adkins. I was like, good for you, mate. Good
for you. Well done, buddy.
Yeah.
Also by the director of Hellraiser Inferno. So, sweet franchise. This is
crazy.
I know we mentioned Hellraiser a lot. We will get to it one day, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Problem with that is that it is a franchise Tom and I have already seen all the way through. But we will get there one day.
One day.
Oh, one day.
But that, the final fight scene through that kind of like Cave Network, the Unisol base, fight with JCVD, the sporting goods store fight.
Yes, where he baseball bats the top of the dude's head off. Yeah. Kaboom!
And he like punches that bowling ball into fucking brittle. Great stuff. And like, I don't want it to be like, come across, I'm like, I don't really understand I'm confused by this franchise and the other films because I have this really strong affinity for the original. I did see the original in my teenage years, but like I didn't watch it again
right
until we did this. So it was one of those things that like I never had like this really strong.
Was it different from how you remembered it?
No, not really. Like I said before, like the things I remember were like was like the intro and the final fight, like the dam bit, and then like the combine harvester bit. Not a lot of it else like stuck out. It was a solid kind of like 6 or 7 out of 10 experience. Solid. And it was good, but kind of forgettable. And then that was why I was kind of like, oh, this is such a weird, it's so weird that there are all these very different takes on this film that you feel kind of just should have gone away, but it doesn't. Which is, that's the crazy thing, that like this series hasn't gone away. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are more Universal Soldier films than there are Terminator films or Die Hard films or Rambo films.
Oh, I don't know that I can confirm that with like absolute clarity, because there's a few Terminator, Die Hards and Rambos that I checked out on, but there's 6 of these. That's still quite a few.
I think it could be that like that it's got more than all of those, doesn't have JCVD in all of them. So JCVD never really got that franchise, or like, you know, like this is his franchise, but he's hardly in it at the end.
He really is. On the subject of like franchise and the expansion of this idea of what Universal Soldier is, maybe we should tackle some of the non-film stuff and the impact that this has had on like other culture, right?
Yeah,
other
because culture, it has. There's been a little bit of Universal Soldiers, you know, poking out into some other culture.
Do you like culture?
Oh, I love culture. Tell you what, actually, I was watching an episode of the Disney cartoon series Gravity Falls, which is a great cartoon series if you like Eerie Indiana.
I love Eerie Indiana.
It's very much like that kind of vibe, this kind of like kooky young kids exploring supernatural stuff. In it, two guys come from the future and they are dressed to look very much like Unisols.
Ooh.
And they both got name tags on them. And one of them's name is their names are like Rolf and Dungren or something.
Oh my god,
like that.
Really?
And I was kind of like,
oh, touché.
I got it. I got that reference. Thank you very much.
That is dope.
Yeah, into that.
Yeah, so because you don't really see it bleeding into that many other things. There's not that many like reference points for Universal Soldier, right?
Yeah.
Not it's like something like the Terminator where you can just have any character go, give me your boots and your motorcycle.
Yeah.
And people will know what it is, you know.
Yeah, like Universal Soldiers is kind of like latched on and it's just kind of clinging on for dear life. And every now and then you kind of like, oh, there it is. But it hasn't, made that like big culture impact where it's being like referenced a lot. But let's say like there was that really weird little bit of it popping up in like a Disney cartoon, which is really cool. And then like at the time we had the video game.
The video game, which was, I believe, Turrican 2.
Yes.
Just reskinned, right? So it was a 2D side-scrolling shooter.
Mm.
Just your classic kind of like walk from left to right, jump up and down and shoot things. It was the exact same game as Turrican 2, sorry.
Yeah.
Only they'd replaced the little floating eyeballs with wings from Turrican with like little tanks, I think. And then the big boss at the end is a giant like 60-foot tall Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, like it was obviously should have been like a mech suit kind of like robot. And then it's just like Dolph Lundgren, who is like the size of your house.
I mean, he's a big dude.
He's a big old boy. And Jean-Claude Van Damme is considerably shorter than him, but this is ridiculous. But then other than that, like the game is like, they've replaced characters with, because we played like a version of it. And the thing that is difficult about it, as with the film, obviously like In the film, Jean-Claude Van Damme is fighting lots of Universal soldiers. They look exactly the same as him. So you're just trying to play this game and you're kind of like, which one am I? Because like all the enemies look exactly the same as you because they're all Universal soldiers until you get to a later level when like a giant robot dragon pops out and then you're kind of like, don't remember this in the film.
I guess, I mean, odd choice. Just, but...
I mean, it's just like very of the time, that kind of like 90s cash grab game. It was like fun to play as a little artifact of how properties and spin-offs were treated back then, where they just kind of bosh a game out, doesn't matter if it's good, what's that, Turrican, put a hat on it.
Yes, and as always, a big shout out to Milo, the video game king of Brighton, for being the guy to supply me and Tom with the chance to play Universal Soldier,
yeah,
the shitty game.
I would say thanks very much, it was not great to play. But
I guarantee
I will not play it again. Now there was a comic adaptation.
Tell
of
me
it.
About the comics.
So there was just like a straight as you got like a lot. I think you still kind of get them now, but certainly like in the 90s, we're getting an adaptation of the film into comics. So I think it was like Now Comics that published it, and it was just like 3 issues, and it was just retelling the story. I don't know if there was an awful lot in there that was new, but something I did find out, there is another comic series called Universal Soldier that, or like character, the Universal Soldier,
yeah,
which is completely unrelated to this, mm-hmm, and actually predates Universal Soldier. I think like, so it was a
predates it.
2000 AD, the British comic, yeah, home of Judge Dredd.
Yeah, yeah.
That there was a character in there called the Universal Soldier that I think started in 87. Now, right. I've had a little look into, I think he appeared in like maybe 30, 35 issues. So he wasn't like a big, he's not like Judge Dredd. He's not like, he didn't have a big impact in that way. But I think.
And the Roland Emmerich one was in no way inspired by this.
I don't think so, because, so, Universal Soldier from 2000 AD, we don't have Luke Davros, we have Max Brewster. That's the name of the character.
Oh my God.
And
Max Brewster just sounds like a really shitty, like, 8-year-old boy who,
yeah,
like Dennis the Menace
he's
or
like
something.
He's like the kid that bullied you when you, yeah, were at school. Fucking hate that Max Brewster. So... he is like also like Luke Davros is like the subject of experimentation by an evil corporation or what have you. And they've put into him the storage chip. Now,
doesn't sound evil.
Yeah, well, wait until you hear how storage is spelt. Storyge.
Storyge.
That is some futuristic spelling right there. And what the storage chip, is it creates a time slip. And like if he's in a fight and he needs like some certain skills to win this fight, he can assume the abilities of anyone in history, past, present, or future.
Or future.
Yeah. By using this chip that creates like a time slip and gives him the abilities of that person. But he loses his own personality and doesn't regain control of his body until he's defeated his enemy.
So then later on he does, once he's defeated.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Then he, so like he could be like, I gotta beat this guy, but the only way I can do it is if I'm Genghis Khan. Storyg? And then he like becomes Genghis Khan and then he kills a guy and he's like, whoa, okay,
that
I'm
sounds
back.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty weird, isn't it?
That's a strange idea. That sounds like a more Universal Soldier than like,
yeah, right.
I'd always wondered about that title for the films. They're like, not that universal, they're just blokes.
They're just some blokes, yeah. Yeah, but I thought that was quite interesting to find out, and weird that I whether or not there were any legal ramifications, whether or not they owned the name, you know, like, but yeah. So there is another little comic thread.
Well, on the subject of the printed page, Tom. I wonder if you can soothe my savage heart, if you can
quell the swell
of the troubled waters of my mind with what I believe will be our final visit to Universal Soldier Storytime.
You know what? I really can.
Oh, thanks.
So for the last time this season, I'll be reading from Universal Soldier, the novelization of the film, written by Robert Tyne, based on the screenplay by Dean Devlin.
Oh, big Deany D.
And so this extract will be taken from the finale.
Ooh.
So let's see how that plays out in the written word. So sit back, relax, enjoy final bit of story time with Tomedy D. Scott staggered to his feet, ready to face his attacker once again. Luke ran out of the barn and threw himself into the air, his right leg straight out, his boot smacking square into Scott's face. The force of the blow threw him through the air and backward onto the unforgiving spikes of the shredder. A dozen steel points perforated his body, puncturing him through his back and sticking out of his chest and stomach, arms and thighs. Scott screamed out in pain, staring wide-eyed at the bloody points protruding from his body. "You son of a bitch!" Luke stared, both horrified and relieved at what he had done. This had to be the end of Scott and his single-minded, murderous pursuit. No man, Unisol or not, could come back from a dozen deep wounds. Then, painfully slowly, Scott started pulling himself off the spiked barrel of the machinery. First he worked free his left arm, then his right. He curved his upper body forward, pulling himself from the blades that held his chest. Then he worked his legs, and finally he dragged his punctured stomach off the last of the points. He stood unsteadily on his lacerated legs, his body a bloody mess. "You motherfucker," he gasped, his eyes boring into Luke's. "You're dead." Luke smashed back, kicking out at Scott again, slamming him back onto the bloody blades, impaling him anew. The new wound seemed to be more than even Andrew Scott could stand. His eyes grew wide in pain and terror, then rolled back up into his skull, his head falling limply. Luke stood in the driving rain, his chest heaving and falling, staring at Scott's slack form impaled on the spikes. Cautiously, he staggered towards the torn and tortured body of his foe. He peered into Scott's lifeless eyes and nodded to himself. It was finally over. But it wasn't! Scott's bloody hand reached out and grabbed Luke by the throat, and with the last desperate strength in his body, started pulling him towards the evil spike that protruded through his chest. Luke snatched at the hand that had his throat in a death grip, but he couldn't break the grasp. He was being pulled closer and closer, the spike aimed squarely at his eye. Before Scott died, he was determined to kill his sworn foe. But Luke would not allow it. He would not permit it. The last of his strength surged, pulsing through his veins. He broke Scott's grip, then grabbed his arm and snapped it in two. Crack! As if breaking a twig. Luke reached down and started up the harrow. The drum turned slowly at first, but then, as the engine picked up, it gained speed, the blades of the machine tearing Scott's flesh and sinew into a bloody pulp. The twisting spikes ground into him, stripping an anguished scream from his throat, a long, wild death howl, a shriek of pain and hot hatred, a scream so loud and alive with anger, it drowned out Luke's triumphant words. "I'm alive!" yelled Luke. And thus concludes story time.
Oh my god! That was brutal!
Yeah. I also just like the end. I don't think it's in the film that Luke just goes like, "I'm alive!
I'm alive!" That like affirmation.
Yeah. Because that's kind of missing from the end, because obviously a lot of it's like, is he dead? Is he alive? And it seems like in the end of this, he's kind of like, "No, I am alive. I'm a real boy."
Well, yeah, because I was expecting a line like that earlier in the extract from Storytime there, when Dolph's character says, "You're a dead man." I thought, oh, there's going to be like a little quip where he's like, "Too late, brother, already been there," something like that. So it was kind of a little deferred payment for that. I was into it.
So there we go. That's the end of story time.
And it was definitely a bit more like visceral than the ending of the movie. And I understand there's two different versions of...
There is an alternate ending to the original film, which had they used, I do not think that we would be here talking about this as a franchise, because it just would not have gone any further than the first film. Now, it's on the DVD, like it's also on YouTube. So if you guys at home want to go and look it up, you can go find it.
Oh, do.
And it's a bummer.
Is it a massive downer?
It's a fucking big old Debbie Downer.
Talk us through it.
So after that bit where Jean-Claude Van Damme has just like ground up Dolph Lundgren
into ground beef for Swedish meatballs.
Yeah. Ooh, bork, bork, bork. so he's like, oh, thank fuck for that. He's bedraggled. He's in the rain. He's bloody. He's covered in mud. And then his dad comes out with a shotgun. He's like, Dad, it's cool. We're free. I got him. And then his dad shoots him.
What?
And then he turns around and he tries to get away and then he shoots him again.
No!
And then he shoots him again.
Dad!
And then he shoots him again.
Daddy Davro!
And it's just like slow-mo of Luke Davro like on his knees in the mud and the rain just being shot by his father. Just being like, no!
Why, Daddy? Why?
Well, why is because the scientist that they go and see at the Veterans Hospital who was the guy who like developed the Unisol tech to like bring guys back from the dead. He shows up and he's kind of like, I'm sorry, Luke, we just couldn't have you going rogue. We gotta tidy all of this up. So the parents were never the parents.
They were, and they've been murdered, right? Or something?
Yes, yes. So they've killed
the real parents. The real parents have been murdered and replaced with like agency types.
Yes. And they're about to kill Luke, but then I think that it's like the police and a news crew show up because of Veronica, her ties with the... They show up and they're like, Veronica, you're on in 5 seconds. And she's kind of like looking at Luke, who's like bleeding out and he's absolutely fucked up. And she's kind of like, she does her news report and she's like, I can't do this. And she throws the mic down and she goes and looks after Luke. The Unisol scientists get arrested, and then we get a flashback. Like a wrapping up from Veronica being like, scientists offered to help Luke Davro to, recover from the Unisol program and live a normal life, but he refused. And then basically the gist is they're like, because in the world of the first film, he's still liable to overheat and die and requires all this medical treatment. And some guys are like, hey, we'll fix you up. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm just going to die. and that's what he does. Like, you just get these shots of like...
He like walks around a pond or
something. Yeah, like looking all bedraggled. And like he's got a little hat on because he's sick and she's looking after him. And then she's like, oh, but, you know, in his life, didn't he, like, it's like, oh, he lived more than any of us ever could. And it's really sad because you just basically, at the end of the film, watch your hero slowly die. Like, it looks like he's got, like, a terminal disease. And I was like, oh, this isn't nice. I don't like this.
It couldn't be further from the end of the book with him going, I'm alive!
Because the end of the original, like, the cut they released, he just, like, kind of kills Dolph. And hugs Veronica, and then everything's fine, and that's it.
But it's like a freeze frame, and you don't find out what happens.
Whereas there's this extra 5 minutes of being like, okay, so that was fun, that was triumphant. But how about, Roland Emmerich says to the audience, how about we then shoot him a bit more than he already has been, and then we let him die slowly? What? How about that?
But he made the decision to take that out.
But then they eulogize him being like, he was the greatest of us all. And
yeah.
I think that, yeah, there were some test screenings of this and people were like, no. Get to fuck. That is, yeah, it's so bleak. Which maybe that is where the inspiration came from for like the last two films where like the guy who directed the last two was kind of like, oh, I've only gone down that really bleak, horrible route. Let's do some of that. Yeah.
Well, look, man, I'm pleased that they didn't. I'm pleased that
Me
they
too.
Didn't.
Me too.
Maybe now would be a good time for us to share our dream Universal Soldier sequels.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Yes, please. I'm into that.
Would you like to pitch your Universal Soldier sequel of your dreams to me and to our good listeners?
Very happily. So, I'd like to submit for your listening approval.
Okie dokie.
My proposed Universal Soldier sequel.
All right.
Now, getting to the end of the year, the festive season is fast approaching.
It's almost upon us.
It is almost upon us. And so with that in mind, so for Christmas 2017, we'll knock it out in a year, I'm proposing Universal Soldier : A Christmas Carol.
Ooh, okay.
So this is the Universal Soldier version of Charles Dickens' classic tale, A Christmas Carol. But also within this, I will try and unite all of the disparate elements of the franchise thus far.
It's a story as old as time itself.
Yeah, so we pick up in the timeline just after the events of The Return. So it's living Luke Davereaux. He's beaten Seth the sentient light bulb. He's living happily with his daughter, or so you would think. But actually, Luke is struggling massively from a huge internet addiction. He is in that strip club all the time.
But it's the only place with Wi-Fi.
Exactly. And he is just there all the time, to the point that he has just become neglectful of his daughter. He's come back from death. He's fought all these villains. And yet the thing that's really brought him down is the internet.
What a waste.
And it's nearly Christmas. It's Christmas Eve, and he gets home, and his daughter, she's gone to sleep like ages ago. She was waiting for him to show up. He hasn't bought her anything. With all that online shopping, and he just hasn't even done it. He's just been on too many dodgy message boards. And he goes to sleep, and then he has this dream, yeah? And gets visited by the ghost of his dead brother, Eric, from Universal Soldier 2 and 3. Now, this is Luke Davereaux from Universal Soldier The Return, so he doesn't actually remember ever having a brother. To him, he's very confused at this point, because he does not remember this course of events of him having a brother, but he's like, Luke, you're human, you're alive. I wish I was alive, but you're losing your humanity to the internet, so you will be visited by three ghosts that will try and reinstill in you the meaning of Christmas and the meaning of what it is to be alive.
Damn it. Yeah, okay, that sounds intriguing.
And Luke is kind of like, oh, okay. And then he goes to sleep, and then he gets woken up by the first of the ghosts.
Who is
Ghost
it?
Of Christmas Past. Now, this ghost takes the form of the cuddly toy monkey that he cuddled in Universal Soldier 2. So because he was from Universal Soldier 2, this Luke Davereaux still has absolutely no idea what the significance of this monkey is. And then the monkey is like, come with me, Luke. I'll show you what Christmas used to be like. I don't know why he sounds like Mickey Mouse, but he does. And then they go back to Cajun country with the family. They're having a big gumbo. They're having a great old time. They're singing songs like, you see, the Christmas is for togetherness. And Luke is like, yes, that is good, but I could really be in a chat room right about now. So that ghost goes away, and then the ghost of Christmas Present comes to visit Luke.
Who could it be?
Well, this ghost, I mean, traditionally in Dickens, like, he's the most jolly ghost.
Yeah,
you know?
Know me better, man.
Yes, exactly. He's got a big grin on his face. And who better to have a big grin on his face than our friend Gary Busey?
Boo-boo!
He is back. Again, Luke does not get the reference. And he's there. Like, they do the number from The Muppets. It's getting warm by the fire. Because who doesn't want to see Gary Busey sing that song with Jean-Claude Van Damme? And then he's like, look, this is what's going to happen on Christmas. You're going to be in that strip club again on MySpace. Like, you know, updating your profile. Your daughter's going to be at home on her own. And you know who's going to come around at Christmas? Fucking Burt Reynolds.
No!
Burt Reynolds is going to come around and kidnap the daughter, because he's going to get the Davereaux genetic code from his daughter and take it out of the Unisols that he's building. Because obviously he's still alive. He came back as a clone at the end of the third one.
Oh my God.
He's going to strip out, like, that pesky Davereaux genome that is it that causes the Universal Soldiers to malfunction and go wrong. Then he'll have the perfect Unisols that will perfectly obey.
No, don't let it happen.
I know, right? But Luke is just still like watching like cat videos on YouTube, and he's still just like, oh, this seems important, but I cannot get away from the internet. I'm so sorry, Boo Boo Boosie. Who is next, ghost? Okay, bye-bye. See you soon. And then the ghost of Christmas yet to come shows up. He's very big. He's wearing a big black robe. It's Dolph Lundgren.
It's
Dolph Lundgren in a big dressing gown. And he shows him what the future will be like. Burt Reynolds has taken his daughter as his own now. He's taken over the world with evil Unisols. And like all like Luke Davro can do is like, he's like, he's shaved his head and he's just looking really sad, and he just hangs out like going on the internet, and then he goes and like shines strobe lights in people's faces really aggressively, and just, everything's just really sad. And Dolph's like, do you want this? Do you want it to be really sad, you shit? And then Luke goes, no! And then he fucking like jump kicks through the fabric of time and space into the future, where he kills Burt Reynolds, he kills Dolph Lundgren for good measure, because he does that in every fucking film. Then he does a fucking split kick jump through time into the past to find the guys that invented the internet. He fucking breaks their necks.
Tim Berners-Lee?
Yeah, and then he jump kicks back to the present day, where everything's gonna be all right. And he has a nice Christmas dinner with his daughter. The internet no longer exists, so he can be a proper family man. And at the end of the film, he turns to the camera and says, God bless us, everyone. Okay, see you soon.
Yay! That, tiny JCVD.
Yeah, and that is it.
I love it. I mean, that was an epic sequel pitch. It feels like the seasonal movie for the ages. Something to unite us in these dark times.
And to try and unite all of the Universal Soldier franchise, that Luke goes on a festive journey through the Unisol multiverse.
Well, Tom, that was an exceptionally epic sequel pitch. I really appreciate that. By comparison, mine is going to be very much the flip side. My pitch is quite short. It's probably the shortest sequel pitch I've done.
That's cool. I probably went on too long.
It's all right, baby. So my idea for a dream sequel is I'd like to see something that's not been done before in this franchise or in any of the others we've covered, or in fact any of our dream pitches. I'm dreaming of a non-fiction sequel.
Nice.
Documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a speculative documentary, because it doesn't exist. I'm dreaming of it. What I'm dreaming of, you know that film Frost Nixon, about Mr. Big Frosty the Snowman interviewing Nixon and getting all intense, and it being like a serious, really important interview, trying to get to the hard facts, the facts that people need to know. Well, this documentary that I want to see happen is that, but instead of Frost Nixon, it's Denny Boosie.
Okay.
I'm dreaming of a world where you get to sit down and spend 2 days in a room interviewing Big Boo Boo Boosie to ask just the hard-hitting questions that people need to know and get to the fucking truth of what Boo Boo is all about.
Yeah.
So the movie is called Denny Boosie. And luckily, I was able to have time to actually create a trailer for this, Tom.
Really?
Yeah. So rather than tell you about it, I'm just going to play for our listeners and for you the trailer for this movie, and you can have a little listen for yourself.
In a world where the Earth was no longer in our control.
Here's the deal. You introduce yourself to me and tell me what you're doing.
With our survival at stake, we have one chance.
I'm Tom Denny.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
And that chance is to fight back.
It's spectacular.
Get ready for the most thrill ride motion picture event of the year.
I want you to take this chicken wing and use it as a suppository. Leave it in for 10 minutes. It'll take you out of your misery.
In theaters everywhere, Friday.
That's terrifying.
I think it definitely speaks for itself.
It really does. Oh, bravo, sir. I can't wait to see it. I'm a bit terrified about being in it.
I just feel like there's no one better to ask the hard questions of Boo Boo than you.
Yeah, I mean, do you think he would be annoyed if I only ask him questions about Universal Soldier 2?
Well, it depends, Tom. This hasn't happened yet. Are you willing to take the chicken wing and use it as a suppository?
It depends if I get to the truth, because the quest for the truth, I mean, that is... How much truth do you think there is in Boo Boo? He looks like he could be a big bag of lies just with some teeth on it.
He's the Kaiser Soze of our time.
Yes! Oh my God!
Okay, well, that's it. I mean, that's all I'm pitching.
Oh, mate, I love it. I love it. That's awesome. I mean, I feel like I'd probably talk to him for about, like, an hour just about his motivations for, like, for that tear that rolls down his face.
Okay, great.
And I think I would probably try and just keep on coming back to that at every opportunity I could, just to see if I could get a rise out of Boo Boo.
He'll keep trying to get more chicken wings up you, though.
I do like chicken wings, but I just generally don't like them up the bum.
That's not the way they were meant to be consumed.
No, 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 it is not.
Well, look, buddy, thank you for listening to my sequel idea with you in it. I feel like we need to finally address the elephant in the room.
Fucking elephants.
Season 5.
My God. Yeah. Well, let's get this underway before we get out and party.
I feel like partying. It's exciting to be ending season 4. It's exciting to be beginning season 5. So thank you, listeners, for everybody that has taken part in this poll. If you're listening to this episode, it is now too late to take part. But thanks for playing anyway. So we asked all of y'all to vote for the season concept for season 5. Mm-hmm. What franchise should we cover? Would it be Nightmare on Elm Street? Would it be The Fast and the Furious? Would it be Air Bud? Now, I know the results.
Mm.
Tommy D, do you know the results?
I do not know.
Okay, so Tom is about to discover, as you, the listener, also discover. I'm just going to reach for the envelope with the winner in it.
Have they been kind?
They may not have necessarily been kind, but they've been just.
Okay.
So again, thank you for taking part. It was a 3-horse race. And the results have definitely been interesting. Tom, would you like to hear what the third place first, I suppose?
Yeah, that sounds like the best place to start.
So the first season that we will definitely not be covering,
mm-hmm.
with 10% of the total vote, The Fast and the Furious.
Oh.
Now, that's a shame. I get it. It's
I've
not
never
a
seen any of the Fast and the Furious films,
no,
so I was
I know.
Really like part of me was like, this is a really good excuse to just sit down and watch them, because so many people have told me great things about that franchise.
I've had a couple of comments from people basically saying the franchise isn't done yet; they're still making them. So maybe we'll come to the Fast and Furious when it's a complete entity.
Yeah.
The people have spoken; we will listen.
Okay.
Now, Tom, that leaves us two other choices:
okay.
Air Bud or A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yep.
You want to hear second place, or you want to just go straight to the winner, because then you'll know what second...
Just let's go for the... You're the host.
Let's just go for the winner, because as soon as I say who second place is, you'll know who the winner is. The winner is, with 66% of the vote, Freddy Krueger with A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I was getting really worried there for a minute. I am intrigued by the idea of Air Bud, but also I was a little bit worried that I don't think I'm quite emotionally ready for Air Bud. So, yes, Freddy Krueger. I'm excited
this
about
that. This is good
time.
With us celebrating the year anniversary of our podcast, we're almost right back where we started.
Yes,
decent
yes,
slash
yes.
Affair. This is 9 movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's 7 original Nightmare on Elm Street movies, if you include the new Nightmare. Then there's Freddy vs. Jason. Yes, guys, we will be re-watching Freddy vs. Jason, this time from a Freddy point of view. Then there is the remake from producer Michael Bay.
Motherfucker.
Oh, I am very excited to be back in Slasher Turf.
Yeah, I'm stoked. I'm stoked for that. Be interesting to watch Freddy versus Jason again. And yeah, like, this is a franchise going to do some weird stuff. Because it gets really meta at, like, one point, but, like, the new Nightmare, is it?
Yeah. It's like the movie within the movie kind of thing.
Cool. Now, awesome. Thanks for voting, guys.
Thank you so much for everybody that took part. So many more of you voted than we thought would, and it was just lovely to hear from you. If you're part of the 24% of people that voted for Air Bud, which is quite a big chunk of people, I'm sorry that you didn't win this time. We've been talking about Air Bud quite a lot because I was trying to trick Tom into thinking that Air Bud was winning the poll. We probably will cover it one day because it does sound interesting.
Yeah.
But not just yet.
So many franchises, right. So little time.
There's been some other really interesting stuff out of the results. It was really lovely to hear, like, suggestions from people that voted in the final boxes. We had someone suggest that we cover The Land Before Time for a future season. That will be super interesting.
Man, there's fucking loads of those guys.
Yeah. We had a mysterious person who simply commented, Boa Bobo.
Strong comment.
Loving a bit of the Boa Bobo. We had someone who very staunchly said, Air Bud is going to break you.
Oh my God, okay.
Unfortunately, it has not broken us yet, but, like, when we tackle it, maybe
it probably
that will be the end.
That'll probably be the final season that we ever do.
Somebody wrote in with a request for us to use more audio from the films that we're talking about to help illustrate the scenes as we discuss them. Yes, we really want to do that, and we're definitely going to try to do that more in the edits, just to say, the scenes that we're talking about aren't always necessarily, like, readily available online. Where we can, I'll be trying to pull that into the edit as much as possible. And lastly, just a big shout out to the person who took the time in the final box where it's like, anything else you want to say to us? Somebody just wrote, bye. No full stop.
Cheers.
Thanks. I love it. Like, goodbye. Everyone else was too rude to say goodbye. So thank you for that.
I appreciate that. Oh, awesome. Okay, cool. I'm stoked. Yeah, now there's going to be it's going to be a bit of a homecoming. Like, it's going to be like starting all over again.
Yeah, off to Springwood, Ohio we go.
Ding, ding. Well, then that's us, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
before we head out on the town, I've just had a text. I think our mates are going to be here in a minute,
oh,
so
sick.
We need to wrap up. But thank you again for listening to the show, as always. It would be super weird if me and Tom were having these conversations and no one was listening. So it means a lot. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us on Twitter at BitterEndPod, on Facebook at BitterEndPod. If you get in touch with us, we will reply, guaranteed. Mm. If you haven't yet taken the time to give us a review on iTunes, even if you're not an iTunes user, it really, really helps me and Tom in terms of, like, how visible our podcast is to new listeners, and it just makes a big difference, yeah? So that would be really lovely. We're going to take a few weeks off before we dive into Nightmare on Elm Street. There might be a cheeky bonus episode in the meantime. Who knows?
And if I think you keep we'll be back.
If you keep an eye on Twitter and Facebook, we'll absolutely let you know when the new episode is going to be coming. Or just make sure you're subscribed and you'll get it when it's ready.
Oh, yeah. So it's coming.
Until then, thank you for listening. I am Todd Jordan.
I am Tom Denny.
Oh, but the
yep, that's our guys.
They were at the door. All right, guys, we're out.
We're going to see ya.
Time
we're going to party.
Go on the town. Hello.
Hey, guys, you're here.
Hey.
Hi, my name is Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, hi, this is Dolph Lundgren welcoming you.
Dolph, Jean-Claude, so good to see you.
Let's get to that strip club and go on the internet.
When I say jump, you say how high, boy. Jump.
How high?
Okay, see you soon.
Okay, bye-bye. See you soon.
See you soon, bye-bye.
Tom will return. Season 5, A Night.